Welcome to the program, everyone. This is Connecting the Notes. I'm your host, Matthew Ray, and we have a very special show lined up for you this hour. We'll be exploring the music of Captain Beefheart and the Magic Band. Joining us is former Magic Band drummer John Drumbo French, who appeared on the momentous Trout Mask Replica album, as well as Gary Lucas, who managed and played guitar with Beefheart later on in his career. Thank you all for tuning in to part one of our two-part show on Captain Beefheart.
Crazy little thing has just gone crazy. Crazy little thing, probably the name that drove you crazy all along. How'd you get a walk? How'd you get it all to move so slow and lazy? How'd you learn to talk real low like that? To where it makes all the men go crazy. Heavy little thing has just gone crazy.
Don Van Vliet, known commonly as Captain Beefheart, left an impressionable output of music between the late 60s and the early 80s. An artist who operated with his own vision, Beefheart made music that was part rock and roll, part blues, part psychedelic, and part something else. Captain Beefheart premiered with the Magic Band in 1967 with the LP Safe as Milk. It featured a young Ry Cooder on guitar.
I thought it was just the most original, coolest, most free-spirited music I had ever seen. And a lot of it was due to the personalities of the players. They seemed so larger than life when I saw them. They were like mythical beasts. Beefheart was not the only character in that group. You know?
Beefheart's bizarre approach to music was evident on his breakthrough album Trout Mask Replica, a record that took a grueling 9 months to complete, and where his group of musicians, the Magic Band, lived with Don in complete isolation while rehearsing for the record.
A squid eating dough in a polyethylene bag is fast and bulbous. Got me?
Couldn't turn it off, and he needed, you know, people around him sometimes to just get it down. He wasn't the most proficient writer of his own lyrics, and you know, he couldn't remember a lot of his parts. He did a lot of this in the tape recording. He carried a tape recording.
The hardest, I would say, the biggest challenge was to try to get him to understand that what he was trying to get us to do, which we actually did accomplish doing, was very, very difficult. You have, sometimes on occasion, you had three guys playing in different key signatures and different time signatures all at once, and then they would have to change at the same time into the next section of the song. So it all had to be like mathematically figured out ahead of time, sort of mapped out, which is what I did on Trout Mask. Sort of mapped all that stuff out so that, you know, when people would end one section, they could go into the next section.
He had a theory that the best effect to achieve in playing music was to play as if each note in a sequence had no relation to the previous note or the subsequent note. And what would that sound like? Well, I guess a very staccato attack. Like, you know, it said bombs bursting in air, like ack-ack.
Round red sombreros wrap her high-tap horse's shoes. When she unfolds her umbrella, Pachuco's got the blues. Her loving make me so happy. If I smile, I crack my chin. Her eyes are so peaceful, thinks it's heaven she be in. Her skin is as smooth as a daisy.
Beefheart left music in 1982 to concentrate on painting. Since then, he has been seldom seen or heard from. This hour on Connecting the Notes, part one of our look at the life and music of Captain Beefheart. Joining us is John French and Gary Lucas, former members of the Magic Band, who talked with the show earlier in the week and shared their experiences working with Don Van Vliet. Thank you all for tuning in.
You can second guess him, that the, you know, but I'm sure he doesn't regret it. He did what he wanted to do, and that's one reason why he liked him.
That's true.
Because he stuck to his gun. And, you know, it was basically, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. It's gonna hang. Nothing should be taken away from that. To me, he still stands as a towering figure in 20th century music, whose influence is incalculable. I don't think there would have been a punk rock movement or a new wave movement as we know it without these parts. A progenitor and a prime if you don't have it, there will be no hope. Why don't you quit acting like it?
Thunderbolts caught easily, shouts the truth peacefully.
Is a reference tone recorded at our operating level.
Electricity from Beefheart's debut LP, Safe as Milk. Don Van Vliet, aka Captain Beefheart, is the subject of our show this hour. Don Van Vliet grew up in Arizona and Southern California, just outside the Mojave Desert. He was an early friend of Frank Zappa, who would go over to Van Vliet's house after school and listen to rhythm and blues records into the early hours of the morning. By 1966, Van Vliet had formed Captain Beefheart and the Magic Band. The group appeared in Southern California and were signed by A&M Records. The company was likely looking for an American band to compete with groups coming out of England, such as the Animals or the Rolling Stones, but what they got was entirely different. Here is one of our guests this show, early Magic Band drummer John French, talking with the show about meeting Don Van Vliet for the first time.
Well, he was in a band that, you know, he had started the Magic Band at that time. And they were they were a blues band, and they were having some of their earliest rehearsals. Can't remember what year it was, but it seems like it was early 1965, I think. Anyway, they were having a rehearsal, and their drummer broke his bass pedal. So Doug Moon, who I knew, called me up and said, "Would you like to come to the rehearsal?" He was one of the guitarists at the time, and he said, "I can get you in if you loan our drummer your bass drum pedal." So that's how I met him. Went to the Jerry Hanley's house, who was the bass player at the time, and when I walked in the door, Don said, "Oh, you're that guy in the band with the jerk that does the jerk." and I kind of laughed because I knew what he meant. We had the band I was in voted in a singer against my approval. I didn't want the guy, and the guy stood on stage and did the jerk a lot, you know. And he was kind of a jerk himself, so it made perfect sense what he said.
Captain Beefheart and the Magic Band covering Bo Diddley's Diddy Wah Diddy. That early single may be why A&M Records was attracted to the young group out of California. At this time, groups like The Animals were gaining popularity, and Beefheart, with his blues-influenced singing and harmonica playing, could have fit the mold of these mostly blues-influenced groups of the time. However, Beefheart did not cooperate with what A&M Records was looking for, and never released a full LP with the label. Instead, Buddha Records took a chance and released Captain Beefheart and the Magic Band's debut LP, Safe as Milk, in 1967. Here's drummer John French talking about that record.
And you were pretty integral in translating the music for him. Were you doing that for the album on Safe as Milk? I know you did it for other albums, but was Safe as Milk,
no,
were you transcribing the music to the other band members?
No. There, Safe as Milk was more of a collaboration that was already about halfway done when I joined the group. Some of the songs like Call on Me and Electricity, and Sure Enough and Yes I Do, they were already completed. Yellow Brick Road, things like that, Zigzag Wander. But there was some stuff that was undone, and I did help a little bit in the beginning, but I was the youngest member of the band. I was 3 years younger than Jerry Hanley, who who was previously the baby of the group, you know. And Don was like 26 to my 18. Okay. So, you know, there was quite an age gap. And I think Alex was the same age as Don, and then Doug was a couple of years younger, and then Jerry a couple of years younger. So basically, you know, I had to sort of turn my head around at that point when I was actually in the band and start thinking differently about drumming, because I'd always played whatever I made up. And suddenly I was being told what to play, and that was a little tough for me to take at first, because, you know, I was known for kind of coming up with my own beats, and suddenly I was being told what patterns to play and how to play it. But at the same time, I looked at it as a learning experience, because it was obviously opening up new areas of my perception of drumming.
Were there ever times that you did make up your own beat and it became accepted, or was it pretty strict?
Yeah, like Abba Zaba was the basic beat to Abba Zaba was something I came up with. Don said he wants something in an African rhythm, and so I came up with what I thought was an African rhythm, and later on I heard the same exact drum pattern on an African field recording, so... It was obviously an African beat.
Song before song, before song blues. That bitch babu. That bitch babu. Abba Zabazu. Just shatters the good. Abba Zabazu. That bitch babu. Abba Zabazu. That bitch babu. Coming over pretty soon. That bitch babu.
Abba Zaba by Captain Beefheart and the Magic Band from their debut album Safe as Milk. That album featured the guitar work of Ry Cooter. Cooter came on board when the compositions were basically complete, except for tweaks being worked out by Don. Don made it a point to tell the public that these songs were his and that he instructed his fellow musicians on what to play and when, and that no improvisations occurred besides the occasional sax or harmonica part by Don himself. Don would often claim in interviews that he taught the other members of the band how to play and dictated every piece of the music. While the overall vision was largely Don's, the Magic Band were already trained musicians and played an important role in helping put the music together. Here's drummer John French talking about some of the misconceptions about the band.
What do you think are some of the misconceptions about the Magic Band? Not necessarily Beefheart, but
you know, you and the you know, handfuls of number of people that were involved in the Magic Band?
Well, especially the earlier players, I think that the public doesn't realize how much we had to do with the actual structuring of the music, putting it together and making sure that it worked. Like I said, Don's most active period when he really, really did concentrate was during Strictly Personal, that era. But most of the time, you know, he would tell the public, you know, well, I wrote this album in 8.5 hours, and I taught these untrained musicians how to play my music. And that just simply isn't true. We weren't untrained musicians. In fact, Jeff Cotton gave guitar lessons. Bill Harkerode had been studying music theory and knew quite a bit about chord progressions and played some jazz when he was in high school. And I'd been in high school bands and learned a little bit about writing music and taken a few piano lessons. So it's not like we were untrained players. Mark Boston probably had the least training as far as he didn't really read music at all. But, you know, that was the big misconception to the public was that this was all Don and we were just guys that he trained and we were lucky to be there when we really had much more of a play in the music. Lyrically, hardly at all. I mean, occasionally somebody would say something and he would use it in a lyric or use it for a title. Like, for instance, Safe as Milk is something that Doug Moon said one night when they were driving a car. He was talking about pot. He said, I don't see why they don't make pot legal. I mean, after all, it's Safe as Milk. And Don said, God, that's great, you know, and wrote it down. And one day, Alex St. Clair was at rehearsal, Alex Knopfler, and he really looked bad. I don't know what was the matter, but he just looked pasty white. And after he left, I said he looked like a Pachuco cadaver. And so he used that. He said, man, that's a good title. So he used that for title of a song. So, you know, he would do things like that now and then. But as far as music, I would say that it was there was at least 50% input from the band. You know, we were writing our own parts to fill in places. I know, and making the music so that it actually worked in the transposition from piano to guitar and bass.
The main event. All those people seem to be hell bent. See those people up on top of the fence, and the man down there selling knuckles through the fence. The little shoe generation man found your print on a dollar bill. Yeah, I found your print on the Indian mound. I found your print on the statues of sound. I found your print on the elephant crown. I found your print in the beautiful mountains. The grass no longer grew around. I found your print in my mind. The pasture is tense. The pasture is tense. No, you got the wrong idea. No, you got the wrong intent. The carpenter carpenterized my bed. The only peephole, where is my den? The pasture is tense. The pasture is tense. Wow! Oh! 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 The pasture is now. I don't see how. See those people that used to throw those tents? You can't see them now. They're in past tense. Oh! The pasture is tense. The pasture is tense. The pasture is tense. The pasture is tense. Oh, the pasture is tense.
main event.
Ry Cooder left the Magic Band after an appearance at Monterey, at which Beefheart appeared on stage, sang the first epic verse of the song Electricity, and proceeded to turn around, exit the stage, and literally walk right off it and onto their manager. The band was left to play their set instrumentally, and Cooder took off after the show, knowing full well he couldn't work with Van Fleet for long. After Safe as Milk, Buddha Records released the album Strictly Personal. Beefheart was furious. Producer Bob Krasnow had mixed and edited the album without the band's consent. Krasnow added overtones and psychedelic effects catered to a psychedelic acid-taking audience the company thought the group appealed to. As Beefheart told Andrew Weiner of Cream magazine, "The idea of being called a genius because somebody thought me a really heavy tablet is kind of corny. It doesn't put me off, but it makes me worry about people that do that. That's really scary. The idea of somebody going like that and all of a sudden my whole being is put into a capsule and thrown over and put under a set category." This marked the end of the group's relationship with Buddha Records, and they soon signed with Straight Records, Frank Zappa's label. Zappa allowed Van Vliet complete control over his next album. Captain Beefheart and the members of his Magic Band spent the next 8 months in a house outside Los Angeles, composing and rehearsing a new album, and leaving the house only to gather essentials such as groceries. The result was 1969's Trout Mask Replica.
Affected everybody, even Mrs. Wooden Wellens, bleeding her nitty. Even Lifeboy floating with his little pistol showing and his little pistol toting. Well, that goes to show you what a moon can do. The Noble Bridge from Tuesday to Friday. Everybody's gone, high society. Hope lost his head and got off on alligators. Somebody's leaving peanuts on the cabins for a white elephant. Escape from the zoo with love. Goes to show you what a moon can do. Moonlight on the mark. Well, it did it for Lifeboy, and it did it to you, and it did it to Zoo, and it can do it for me, and it can do it for you. Moonlight on Vermont. Give me that old time religion. Give me that old time religion. Don't give me no affliction. That old time religion. It's good enough for me. It's good enough for you.
to show them. Come out 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 to show them. Get that old time religion. Give me that old time religion. Give me that old time religion. It's good enough for me. Without your new affliction, don't need your new restriction. Give me that old time religion. It's good enough for me. Moonlight on Vermont.
Moonlight on Vermont off of Captain Beefheart's 1969 record Trout Mask Replica. Joining Van Vliet on the record were musicians Jeff Cotton, John French, Mark Boston, Victor Hayden, and Bill Harkleroad. They were all given different names by Beefheart, including Zoothorn Rollo, Drumbo, and the Mascara Snake. The group spent 8 months confined to one house where they arranged and rehearsed the album. John French was largely responsible for translating Beefheart's musical ideas to the rest of the group. Here he is discussing the process.
Eventually, when you started transcribing the music for him, how did Beefheart translate the music to you, or tell the music to you for you to teach the other members?
Well, basically, when he actually started writing music with a piano, when we did Trout Mask Replica, when we started working on Trout Mask Replica, Frank Zappa and Don became friends again. Frank had been on the East Coast at the Garrick Theater performing, and when he came back out to California, Don and him hooked up and rekindled their friendship. And Don noticed that Frank used a piano to compose. So Don decided that he wanted to get a piano and try that. So basically, he didn't have any lessons or know anything about playing piano. He just sat down and hunted and pecked, and he'd find things. And he was famous for asking somebody to record something, and I wound up being the guy that was suckered into recording his ideas. Well, you can imagine with reel-to-reel tape, trying to find a blank tape when they never bought any more tape. I was constantly looking for little pieces of tape that would actually work. So finally, I just gave up because all the tapes were filled, and I said, the tape recorder's broken. I took the fuse out of the tape recorder. So he was wondering how he was going to do this, and one day I took a book that I had been writing drum rhythms in, a little music manuscript paper book, and wrote down something that he was playing on the piano, and I just set it down, not thinking about it, and I wasn't really thinking in terms of me doing that for him. But he walked downstairs a little later and said, hey, can this be played back? Is this something I wrote? Played? And I said, yeah. And he said, can you play this back? And so I said, I think so, you know. So I had a few piano lessons, so I knew a little bit about the instrument. So I just kind of sat down and played back, and he said, God, that's great, man. That's the way we're going to write this album, you know. So that's kind of the way it got started. And basically what I'd do is I'd sit next to Don, and I'd play everything a couple of octaves higher than he'd play. And a lot of times, after a while, I got used to the way he played and his style and his rhythm patterns and stuff, and I would just put my fingers in the positions, and I would say, is this what you're trying to play? And I'd play something, and he'd go, yeah, that's it. So I'd write it down. So I got to be really fast after a while, and I was kind of able to sort of pick up, not telepathically, but by intuition, what he was writing.
And this started at the Trout Mask album? Is that the first time this method was really coming into play with you guys?
Yeah, and I only did it for the Trout Mask album, and then after that I left the band, and Bill Harkleroad took over. And Bill worked a different way than I did, where he actually sat with tapes, because cassettes had just been released. So imagine how long ago that was. The technology was that cassette tapes were very convenient and cheap to buy, and so Don would have a cassette player going, and he'd just ramble on at the piano, and then poor Bill would have to sit and listen through hours of this stuff, picking out the gems, you know, the diamonds in the rough, and putting them together and arranging them. So it was a lot more involved, but Bill actually memorized everything. There wasn't, as far as I know, there weren't any written transcriptions of anything from that era, from Lick My Decals on.
So,
and then I kind of went back and repeated the process of being musical director and transcribed music from cassettes in 1975 for the album Bad Chain Puller, which was recorded in 1976 and has never been released.
Now here she come walking, looking like a zoo.
Hello, Moon.
Hi, Ella Guru. She know all the colors that nature do. Hi, Ella Guru. Hi, yellow, hi, red, hi, blue, she blew. Hi, Ella Guru. She do what she mean and she do what she do. Got something for me, got something for you. She show something.
Just dig it.
That's right, the mascara stayed fast and bulbous. Tight also.
During the recording of Trout Mask Replica, when Don and all the members of the Magic Band resided in the same house, the environment inside was tense. Besides not having any money, the members were isolated from the outside world and were subject to Van Vliet's bad temper and verbal and physical abuse. Here's drummer John French talking about this time.
You know, during the recording process of Trout Mask Replica, and there's plenty of accounts about how what that situation was like inside that house, and I don't want to make you recount all of that. But how do you think that situation made that album come out? Do you think that album would have been different had the situation recording it been different? Or situation rehearsing it, I should say.
Well, because of the fact that we were all sort of isolated from the outside world in that house forced us into a situation where we had very little outside stimulus or escape. We had little escape from the music. And so doing something that intense, you know, it could only be accomplished in that kind of a setting. So if there would have been more distractions, like, for instance, if Don would have lived in that house and we'd have all had cars and lived somewhere else, we'd have probably all driven away and never come back because it was ridiculously hard work. And for me, I knew at the time that it was never going to really make me any money. It wasn't going to be something that's going to be a money-making opportunity. Basically, it would just be something that would be critically noticed.
So is that what kept you from driving away and never coming back, basically?
The thing that kept me from driving away and not coming back is that I didn't have a car. There were several times I wanted to leave. In fact, once I did. And I think everybody in the group at one point, except for Bill Harkerud, tried to get out of there. Mark had his clothes packed and hidden out in the bushes somewhere across the street, and he was going to take off. Jeff ran away and hitchhiked home. I left at one point and with a friend and then came back. And it was, it was a very trying circumstance. Don was a very demanding person. He was very self-centered, wanted his own way. He would have a lot of, grueling brainwashing sessions, where he would center in on somebody and get everybody focused on one person. He would just tear them down and break them down and try to get all their defenses broken down. But at the same time, it was very... I think some of it was probably good, but a lot of it was psychologically very damaging because everybody's esteem in that group was very low, except for Don's, by the end of that period of time.
Did this behavior by Don, did this produce camaraderie within the other members of the Magic Band?
Did this what?
Did it produce camaraderie between you guys? Did you kind of team up under this, or did it cause friction and just like a dysfunctional family almost?
Well, that he because of the talks, Don, the purpose of the talks, like I said, these brainwashing sessions, sort of. We call them talks, but they were very intense. They were sometimes they go on for days. People would get beat up. People would wind up in tears, crying, and this happened quite often during the Troutness period. What that did was each one of us in turn betrayed the other. So it sort of set up walls between us, so there was no camaraderie. Now later, after we got away from the situation and looked at it and were out from under, so to speak, the spell of the situation, it did produce camaraderie. I mean, we're all really good friends, and we feel like we went through a... quite an experience together that nobody else could really understand.
Now we won't have to worry about Rocket Martin with any of those girls.
Rocket Martin takes off again into the wind.
What do you run on, Rocket Martin?
Say beans.
I run on beans. I run on laser beams.
When I get lonesome, the wind begins to moan. When I trip, fall in ditch, somebody wanna throw the dirt right down. When I feel like dying, the sun come out, stole my fear and gone. Who's afraid of the spirit with the blues for bones? Who's afraid of the falling ditch? Falling ditch ain't gonna get my bones. How's that full of spirit? How's that full of things? My fault, the thing's gone wrong. Oh, when I'm smiling, my face wrinkles up real warm. Oh, when I'm frowning, they've just turned to stone. Falling ditch ain't gonna get my bones. Get lonesome, the wind begin to moan.
ain't gonna get my balls.
Captain Beefheart and the Magic Band with the song Fallen Ditch from the 1969 record Trout Mask Replica. This is Connecting the Notes, and this hour we are exploring the music of Captain Beefheart and talking with members from the Magic Band. Frank Zappa allowed Beefheart complete artistic control over the album Trout Mask Replica, even if it meant covering drum sets with cardboard or recording his vocals without using headphones, only partially hearing the track he was singing over from another room. As Zappa stated for the BBC documentary, the artist formerly known as Captain Beefheart, quote, "It was impossible to tell him why things should be such and such a way. It seemed to me that if he was going to create a unique object, the best thing for me to do was to keep my mouth shut as much as possible and let him do whatever he wanted to do, whether I thought it was wrong or not." Both John French and Gary Lucas reiterated this statement in our conversations. Here's Gary Lucas, who served as guitarist and manager for Beefheart beginning around 1980, talking about how he handled such situations. His comments will be followed by more thoughts from Trout Mask drummer John French. I know Frank Zappa said during a documentary that it was really tough to make suggestions for, you know, especially technical details to Beefheart. Did you ever try to suggest things during the recording process?
Oh, yeah, I did. And, you know, he didn't take direction all that well, to tell you the truth. He didn't always, you know, really cut into all of your ideas all the time. And so I just sort of let him do what he wanted to do. But, you know, one idea was we thought to make the last record sound a bit more palatable sonically and make it competitive with popular new wave rock groups out there at the time, like the B-52s and whatnot. But he totally went the opposite way. He didn't, you know, listen to us. And the other guys agreed. And he said, "Oh, no, I think that's really corny. I don't want my music to have all that reverb. It'll sound like it's in drowning in heavy syrup." So he said, "I think it's really hip to just do it make it the music sound really two-dimensional, you know, like a flat canvas." So he made a very dry record, you know. And, well, that was his choice. You know. You can second guess him at the, but I'm sure he doesn't regret it. And he did what he wanted to do, and that's one reason I really liked him.
That's true.
Because he stuck to his guns. And, you know, he was basically, "I'm going to do what I'm going to do."
What were some of the biggest challenges you faced working with him?
Well, the fact that he didn't understand at all the musical process. Like, for instance, Frank Zappa played an instrument and played parts. You know, I mean, he could sit down and play guitar and he could play parts. He was a drummer, so he understood drumming. He wrote and transcribed music himself, so he understood music theory. He understood all these things, whereas Don didn't have a clue about any of that and thought it was all silly technical garbage that he was above. And so the hardest, I would say the biggest challenge was to try to get him to understand that what he was trying to attempt to get us to do, which we actually did accomplish doing, was very, very difficult. You have, sometimes on occasion, you had three guys playing in different key signatures and different time signatures all at once. And then they would have to change at the same time into the next section of the song. So it all had to be, like, mathematically figured out ahead of time, sort of mapped out, which is what I did on Trout Mask. Sort of mapped all that stuff out so that, you know, when people would end one section, they could go into the next section. And basically, you didn't really have... It's not like normal music where you have a beat and everybody's playing the same time signature. All you really had to go through for was a pulse. Not even the drums kept a beat part of the time that anybody could really play to. You just had to play to the pulse and not really listen to anybody too much. It's sort of, you were kind of in your own world, but you were still connected. but you had to be aware peripherally of what was going on with the other players. But if you concentrated on it too much, you'd lose where you were. So it was kind of an odd meditative state you had to go into to play the music.
And what would happen when you try to explain this kind of music theory to him? Just a dead road, or?
Well, you can never get past square one, because he would just lose his temper, and you know, he was a lot bigger, meatier guy than I was back then. I was, you know, like 140 pounds to his 190, I think, or 200 pounds. And he'd played football and stuff. In fact, one day he picked me up and threw me against the wall because he was upset with me about something. So I was, you know, I was very hesitant to try to explain how difficult this was. And any time that he would say, he'd say, okay, you do this and do this. And I'd say, well, wait, he'd say, just do it, man. You know, and he'd get really flustered because he thought that what I was doing was he misinterpreted what I was saying as trying to show resistance. And what I was really trying to do was explain that this had to be mapped out ahead of time, and we all had to put our heads together and figure out how to make this happen. It wasn't just something that could be spontaneously done, you know.
In sugar, in spikes, in neon lights, in walks, in lights, in chains. Dolphin smoke, whooping hope, godless sky rush by. Fall back and dark, fall back and dark. I steam stale, shoes move, booming pale. And grow miners in diamond back time. Now it's king for a day with my lady feeling fine. Got my peeking up hat in my caramel mask, trippy low car. Got my spotted wrist around my honey. Going to see the navy blue vicar, call Peter and Mrs. Ray Walker.
What do you think are some of the misconceptions about Beefheart and his music that are around out there?
Well, you know, one big one is that there's not much musicality, and that it's all made up on the spot, because a lot of it's of cacophonous, particularly the three jazz era of Trout Mask Replica and Lick My Decals Off Baby. But in fact, you know, every note except for what Beefheart was playing pretty much was meticulously sculpted out. And learned largely through memorization, but there were charts floating around courtesy of John French, who helped do a great deal of organization of the music.
Right, he was involved a lot with kind of translating for Beefheart.
Yeah,
who who, if anyone, took that role on when he wasn't with the group?
I think we all, I mean, well, I know that Jeff Tepper and Eric Feldman, you know, I mean, Eric was certainly, I saw charts that he had written out for Sheriff of Hong Kong. So, I mean, I think anybody who was involved when I was involved took it upon themselves to do the work. We used to get together and try and codify and make sense of some of the rehearsals, because sometimes Don wasn't all that precise about what he wanted to do. I mean, and then we say, okay, well, this is how it goes, but then he was free to tear it up the next day and say, oh, no, man, you got it all wrong, this is how it goes, right up to the last minute. So, but we were all conversant with his strange methodology, so that, you know, we did what we had to do to make it work and ultimately hope to meet his approval, you know, before we went in to record it.
Was it true that Beefheart had you cover your drum set in cardboard for portions of Trout Mask Replica?
Well, I did that for rehearsal purposes, because we had a sort of a neurotic lady who lived across the street down a couple of houses, and she was constantly complaining about the drums. I can't stand those drums. It's driving me crazy. And she obviously had, you know, migraine and emotional problems and things going on. So I thought the solution would be, Don said, you know, what about if you just put, you know, cardboard on your drums for rehearsing? So that's what I did. And he says, God, we should use that sound. When he heard the sound, he said, we should use that sound on something. So yes, I did cover the drums with cardboard, drums and cymbals with cardboard, for the song Hair Pie. I think it was Baked Too, the one we did in the studio.
After Trout Mask Replica, Captain Beefheart continued making music. He went on to work with Frank Zappa and began to concentrate more on painting, a longtime passion of his. We'll look at the post-Trout Mask Replica era of Beefheart and hear more from Magic Band members John French and Gary Lucas on our next hour, where we will continue to explore the music of Captain Beefheart and the Magic Band. I'm Matthew Ray, this has been Connecting the Notes. Thank you for tuning in, and hope to see you for part 2.